I'm thrilled to be speaking today with psychic medium Kim Russo. Kim is both a Forever Family Foundation certified medium and a Winbridge Research certified medium. I'll also mention Kim absolutely loves science, and she's incredibly curious about her abilities and the science behind them. She's an internationally renowned psychic medium, intuitive counselor, and spiritual teacher. Kim's abilities have been tested and verified since she's certified as a highly evidential medium by the Forever Family Foundation and the Winbridge Institute for Applied Human Research. Kim's also the host of the long-running series, The Haunting of and Psychic Intervention. She's the author of The Happy Medium, Life Lessons from the Other Side, and Your Soul Purpose, Learn How to Access the Light Within. Kim is a frequently requested guest on many news and radio shows, such as Coast to Coast with host George Nuri, and has appeared on many talk shows, such as The Real, Inside Edition, The Maury Povich Show, and The Mel Robbins Show. With her down-to-earth approach and compassionate heart, Kim is committed to her sole mission of helping to bring healing messages to all those in need. Kim caters to large and small audiences around the world by sharing her knowledge through live readings, lectures, and workshops. She is a fascinating person, and I think you'll all really enjoy this episode. So, a lot of you have reached out saying you wish there were full videos of all episodes, and I have been posting videos, but with a still frame, not with people. And I did some research and learned how to do some better quality video editing. So going forward, for most of the episodes, you will now be able to watch them in full video on YouTube, so you can see what the guest looks like. And I definitely would love your feedback on any of the video episodes. You'll be able to watch this full talk with Kim Russo on YouTube. And I'm also going to go back through and edit and post older episodes in full video on YouTube. I often didn't record video for the earliest episodes, so I won't be able to edit all of the past episodes into video, but I'll do the ones I can. It's going to take some time, so they'll be rolled out slowly, but I am getting to them. And any of you who see them, I would love your opinions and any feedback. And thank you so much for taking the time to give feedback and your opinions. I really love hearing from all of you. Welcome to What the Fuck Just Happened. I'm your host, Liz Enten. If you listened to the intro, you know my story. If not, here's a brief summary. I'm a science-y skeptic, and when my dad died, I took a shot in the dark and decided to investigate if there was any possible evidence of an afterlife. I assumed that was as realistic as Santa Claus, but I was desperate. However, I was so blown away by what I discovered that I wrote a book and launched this podcast. In this podcast, I'll be talking to some fairly normal people about some really weird shit. I speak with everyone from psychic mediums and afterlife researchers to ordinary people who've had some inexplicable experiences. So come, listen. There's no need to draw any final conclusions. Keep an open mind and wonder, what the fuck just happened? Hi, everyone. Today, I am speaking with psychic medium Kim Russo. She is certified by the Forever Family Foundation, which, as all of you know, has been my rock. And she is also a Winbridge certified research medium, as well as has some great books that got me through some dark days and some really interesting shows. So welcome, Kim. It's fun to see you again.
Hi, Liz. It's great to see you too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. So I have to ask you, when did you first realize you were a medium or had psi abilities of any sort?
It happened at a very early age, but I didn't think that was anything out of the ordinary, around the age of five. But it wasn't until I was almost 30 years old that I made the connection between my childhood visitations and what was actually starting to happen in my young adult life right after I gave birth to my third child. I kind of feel as if when I was younger, I was seeing silhouettes of apparitions at the foot of my bed. And when I was done having my third child, almost at the age of 30 years old, the apparitions came back with a voice. But in between my dating years, which were my teenage years, and my childbearing years, everything shut down. It was quiet on the home front. And I do wonder about that, but the answer I received when I tried to meditate on it was part of your soul contract was to have your children first, and they didn't want any interference with that. And then they brought on my soul mission, fast and furious.
So what happened when you went onto your soul mission? What was this fast and furious?
Well, it started to be like I would, whenever someone would pass on, whether it be family members or friends of the family, people close to me, it started where I started to hear a poem, line by line, verse by verse, and then I would hear in my head, share this poem with the family for their comfort. And I felt this nudge to get a piece of paper and take dictation of everything I was hearing. And it was some feeling of an urgency that comes over you, like anything, like where some voice tells you, go check the stove, you might not have turned it off. And you rush in the kitchen and look at the stove. It was that kind of a thing. So I started this poetry for the deceased. And I decided that after sharing these poems, I felt foolish at first, but then I saw what comfort it brought the family. And I was channeling information in this poetry that I didn't even know. For example, when my father's brother passed away tragically, trying to save a dog's life on the highway, the poem started with the verse, he came to earth in 28 to save some lives that couldn't wait. And I had to actually do the research. I didn't know when my uncle was born, what year, but it was 1928. I was like, wow, how did I didn't know that at all, at all. Never heard it. You know, he lived in California most of our lives, so it wasn't like we've had conversations about these things. I might have gotten to see him once a year if we were lucky. So it was stuff like that, you know, and then I started hearing voices when I was doing mundane tasks, such as vacuuming, washing dishes, blow drying my hair. I would hear like, hi, my name is Sally. I died in a car crash. Can you get in touch with my parents? Tell them I'm okay. And I'm like, am I imagining this? What were these people? So, of course, needless to say, probably as with most mediums, I felt like I was going insane. And then there's just so many things that led to each part of my curiosity. You know, Liz, I am a Gemini, so we tend to be very curious people. And we want to learn everything that life has to offer, especially these newfound voices that I was hearing in my head. So some I would hear with my own thoughts. When you think, gee, what am I going to make for dinner tonight? You don't say that out loud. But I was hearing a lot of my information that way.
What was your initial thought? Where did you think this was coming from?
I was raised very religious, by the way. And we were taught that You need to protect yourself from evil, because evil is always trying to infiltrate. You know, I was raised in a Christian household where we were taught, don't go outside of the realm of talking to anything but Jesus or God. Even the saints, they didn't believe in the saints. So I was thinking that I didn't think I was connecting to anything evil, because there was nothing harmful in it. I'm very science-based, as you know, Liz, and that's where my mind goes. Like, wow, something opens inside of me that's allowing me to know this information. I started knowing things about people. I started getting visions of the future with people that I care about. And things were coming true. And that was actually freaking me out a little bit, because some things I didn't want to know. I really just didn't want to know, you know. But at one point, I started reading a lot about, well, first of all, there wasn't a lot in the library in those days. We're talking the early 90s. It wasn't much. So I resorted back to all of the older books back in the, you know, days of the Salem or the mediums that were back early on in the days. And I did read a lot of things, but there was one thing that I read in a book that to this day was my saving grace. And I believe was one of the biggest answers I could come across. And the book was called The Link, L-I-N-K. I just happened to pick it up in the library. In those days, before I would take a book out, I wanted to see, is this for me? Is this something that could help me on my path? And I opened up to a page that specifically my eyes went right to the sentence that said, most mediums that were tested or studied most of them have one thing in common. They were all hit with high doses of electricity before the age of 10. When I thought about that, it's no secret. I know for a fact that I was electrocuted at the age of 5, between 4 and 5. I don't recall the exact age. It was my fault. It was Christmas Eve. I was curious as a child as well. And I saw a safety pin lying on the floor next to my Christmas tree. And I went under the tree, I grabbed the pin, and there was a socket, an electrical socket. And something in my brain said, oh, I wonder what would happen if I stick this pin in the socket. I shot across the room. No joke. No joke. And my arm was burned charcoal or black. My mother was cooking in the kitchen. My aunt lived next door. I remember the chaos. My mother screaming. She wasn't not good in emergencies. But they came and they wrapped my arm and they took me to the local doctor. In those days, you were able to call your doctor and he would meet you at the doctor's office. He put this salve on my arm. It's called Silvadine. It's still in existence. He wrapped my arm in a really good bandage. And he said to my mother, keep this on. She may have some scarring. Don't get nervous. I have no scarring whatsoever. But scientifically, I believe something opened up in my auric field between this realm and the other realm. And that's where the gifts started happening. And that's when I started seeing apparitions at the foot of my bed.
That's when you saw them when you were a child, right after that.
Yes.
Did they look as solid as a human?
No, no.
What did they look like?
They were transparent, but yet I can make out everything about them. But they just looked transparent. So I could see what they were wearing. I could see their facial expressions. I could see how tall they were. Just like I'm looking at you, but that you would have a light behind you, a transparent glow. And it was the same group at the foot of my bed most of my childhood. Without fail, as soon as the lights in my room went off, there was a street light that was always shining through my window. Couldn't help it. And that street light would literally shine the light on these beings. Back then, I didn't understand what they wanted. Knowing what I know now as an adult, I started looking at some family photos of my dad. He's a European from Naples, Italy. And these people look like immigrants. When I started looking at family photos, I noticed that a lot of my father's family in Europe would dress like these people. They were dressed in black, the women in the dress and the men in the suit would like kind of look like they were from the Depression era. I personally do not think they were my father's family because I never saw pictures of these people in any generational photos. However, my dad did build the house that we lived in. Again, I only know this as an adult trying to put two and two together and connect the dots. Perhaps my father disrupts some type of land when they built these homes. I don't know. Really, I still don't know the answer to this. But they were there without fail. My sister and I shared a bedroom, and she never saw what I saw. But she didn't get electrocuted. I did, you know.
That's pretty fascinating. And there's a little bit of verification there about who they were too, and at least conceptually.
I bought the book, the link. I went on Amazon at the time when I read this. I said, I must own this book, and I have it just for the proof. Oh, I'm all about the proof, as you know.
Yes, so we have bonded over that, which is we're on the same page there, except you can do cool shit, I can't.
I was always testing myself. To this day, I now have way more of a knowledge about how this works. But in the earlier days, I didn't know about the science component except for the electricity part and being electrocuted. But as I got older, I started to understand more about energy. And science was my favorite subject in school, too. It still is. I'm just so fascinated by how things work. If I was going to accept this as my sole mission, I needed it to be credible in some way, shape, or form. Because if I didn't do this work, I would never believe it. I would think it was some kind of parlor trick.
Which is what I thought till I started researching. And what was a shift that made you decide to pursue this as an actual career?
Good question. So, being the curious person I was, I would only read people that I didn't know to keep it legit. No way you could say I knew this or that. So, being the curious person that I was, I actually had a friend who initiated, let's put you to the test. We were on the same bowling league at the time, and it was girls' night out. We were all sitting around after bowling, and she was curious as well, and her father-in-law had just passed on. So she takes her watch off of her wrist and she hands it to me. She says, "This is not my watch. This is somebody that I love who passed on. See what you pick up on it." I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even know why she handed me her watch, but I went along with it. And I started to just pick up, which was really funny. This was so funny. This was such a shift. I said, he keeps saying something about a lever. A lever? She laughed and she said, keep going. And then I said a woman's name. I'd be lying if I said I remembered the name. But I could call this girl and ask her. I'm still her friend. And she said, that's my mother-in-law, that's her name. And I said, oh, is she crossed over? She said, no, she's alive. She said, keep going. And I started to pick up on names of the whole family. And it winds up that it was her father-in-law who had just crossed. He was an Italian immigrant who had a very thick Italian accent. And she said, he died of liver failure. But the way he said liver, was lever with his accent. So I thought she was stretching it, to be quite honest. And the next morning, she called me. She said, do you have any idea what happened last night? I said, I do, but I'm not convinced. She says, well, what do you think? You were reading my mind? She said, you told me things, Kim, I didn't even know. I had to go and check with my mother-in-law. I said, all right, well, I don't know. She said, well, I have my brother here. I stopped by my brother's house. And he lost a very dear friend of his. Do you think you could try to do what you did last night? Now, I'll never forget this because it was 11 o'clock in the morning, but it was okay. My baby was down for a nap. My other two were in school, so I did have some time to kill. I said, listen, I'll try. I don't know. So I closed my eyes and I started seeing all these images and I started hearing things in my head. And I said, well, it looks like I'm tuning into someone who's a car mechanic. She said, why do you say that? I said, well, I see a man under the hood of a car and I see him removing parts and I hear her brother just bust out laughing. And I said, well, why are you laughing? Well, was he a mechanic? He said to me, no, but he was a car thief. And him and I used to steal parts of cars. And he told me the parking lot where we all grew up. I knew the place. I said, I'm talking to a car thief right now. He said, I'm afraid you are. I said the same thing. I said, car thieves go to, like, am I connected to a good place? I didn't know anything. And it really started from that point on. They were telling their friends, people were telling other friends, and they all wanted readings. And I decided I wasn't confident enough to charge anyone. I just wasn't. And I wasn't comfortable with it. To me, it was still an experiment. I was still experimenting. And I felt that if I didn't charge people, if I didn't deliver, who cares? They're not giving me money. They're only out time, right? But I think I took it a little too far because I went one whole year reading complete strangers for free in my home at night when my children were in bed. And of course, my husband was home. So whoever came to my door, it was word of mouth. It had to be a referral. People were giving me gifts, though. They were very kind. Nobody really wanted things for free. And the story just continues. There's so much more. You know what that saying, Liz, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Yes,
That
yeah.
happened to me because a woman that I met out of nowhere was a teacher, a psychic teacher. And she actually lived around the corner from me. And she kept asking me to take her classes. She knew nothing about me. She had just met me at a lecture that she was giving. And I put my name on a mailing list, and she picked me out of the mailing list. And my sister's name was right under this, my name, but she never had called my sister. And she said, I'm giving psychic development classes, and my spirit guides told me that you need to be one of my students.
And she just reached out to you, not the whole list, just you.
Well, she did tell me that there were certain people on that list that stood out to her. So I was not the only person, but she did, assure me that she did not reach out to everyone on the list. And she said she used her own psychic abilities to get the feeling. And I thought she was full of it because when I found out where she lived, I said, oh, she's around the street. I'm an easy target. Plus, I don't trust many people in the sense of, I'm a New Yorker, right?
I
Sometimes,
relate.
yeah, you could relate, right? Sometimes people, they, just need people for their class. So here's the good news. So I thought she was giving her classes in the morning and I had no childcare. I was stay-at-home mom at the time. And I said, I'm sorry, I cannot attend. I have a child. And he was quite young. He was a baby. She said, Kim, I'm not going to forget you. She called me 1 year later and she said, guess what? It's Holly. I'm calling you again. Now giving classes in the evening and you have no excuse. Can't you get your husband to babysit? She was relentless, this woman. Relentless. So I guess at the time I didn't really have great boundaries. So I said, all right, I'll check out your class. I said, listen, can I pay as I go? Because she told me how much the classes were. They were only $20. She said, I'll tell you what, You can pay as you go, no obligation. And you could quit at any time if you don't like it. So I thought I was going to see chicken's head getting cut off. I didn't know what I was getting into. If it was voodoo, I was raised very religious. She was nice enough, and I was curious enough. So I went to these classes. There were 12 in total. She wasn't a medium. That's the funny part. She wasn't a medium.
What, she was a psychic or what? Just knew how to teach?
Yes, she gave me all the tools I needed. She gave me book lists. She talked about techniques, tarot cards, crystals, like all of the basics. And once a month, there would be a meeting at her home, and she would put each student to the test to go around the room and read each other. And usually on those once a month, I wouldn't go because I was not comfortable doing this work. And one night during the class, somehow she was reading the class. And when she got to me, she told me I was going to be a famous medium. Now, at that time, I was way more interested in hypnosis, past life hypnosis. Don't ask me why. I'm actually still very, very, very intrigued by that, which is reaching the subconscious or soul through hypnosis. And I was an avid reader. I had read the book Many Lives, Many Masters by Dr. Brian Weiss. Again, I believed that book because he was a prominent psychologist that stumbled upon some supernatural situations. I won't give away the narrative of the book. But that's really what I wanted to do. And she said, no, you will be a very well-known medium. I didn't believe her. I did not believe her forever and ever and ever. After the classes were finished, there was a psychic fair in our neighborhood, and she called and asked me if I would be one of the psychics. I said, nope, not doing it. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a medium. I thoroughly enjoyed your classes. And that's about it, Holly. I'm not a reader. She laughed. She said, okay, sweetie, I respect that. That's when the voices were out of control. They were not, I didn't know how to control the voices. And I had to call her because I had nowhere to turn. And she laughed. She said, oh, now do you believe me? You're ready. You're ready. Spirit wants you to do this work. Never more petrified in my entire life. I wound up doing the psychic fair. Never was more frightened in my life. She's told me she got great feedback from my readings, and quite a few of them called and made appointments. So it really has not stopped ever since, to be quite honest.
You were definitely almost didn't have a choice in doing this.
I always say I don't talk to them, they talk to me.
I
I didn't seek them out. I did not seek them out. Yeah.
am so jealous. I would love this.
Well, you don't want to get electrocuted. But
No.
there are a lot of mediums that develop the gift because it's in their family, which I later learned it is in my family on my father's side. So I guess you could combine that with the opening up of the portal in my aura. But my father's sister was a renowned healer, and she lived most of her life in Venezuela because that's where her husband was from. And we always heard about her abilities growing up as children. But she wasn't a medium, but she was a prominent healer. Sick children were brought to her from all over the countryside, and she lived on the top of a mountain, and they would just bring their children like desperate, holding their sick children about to die, and she would like bring them back to life. And this is true. She actually saved her own son's leg from getting amputated because he was in a motorcycle accident in Venezuela, and gangrene set in, and he was all set to get the surgery the next morning. And she sat by his bedside, and he woke up in the morning. And he said, "Mom, why are you pulling my legs all night?" She said, "I never touched your legs," but she was praying all night, and she was inviting in all the shamanistic healers from the other side, and they were working on him. And the doctors came in and said, "You don't need surgery. We can't explain this. Gangrene is gone." He now lives in America, and he's very active. He's a contractor. He works every day on his feet. So it is in my family too, just so just to give that little added thing there.
Seems to be with a lot of mediums. It seems to be biological, which gets me into wanting to talk to you about the science. So, Winbridge, you are a Winbridge certified research medium. Can you share, first of all, about the process of how you got approved for that?
I think it was just filling out an application. Another medium had recommended me to them. I was already a Forever Family Foundation, a certified evidential medium, and they really did like that idea. So I think I'm not sure, to be quite honest, if they looked at those mediums first because they knew that we already went through a lot of rigorous testing. But if I'm not mistaken, I think that really was only the only prerequisite. So I feel like I had a little bit of an in already, but they did their own testing that was quite different than the Forever Family Foundation. Definitely kicked it up quite a few notches, and the double blind, triple blind testing that they did, which really dispelled the theory of me reading anybody's mind, because I didn't know if I was reading a man or a woman. Young or old. Oh, and back in those days, they had the touch tone telephones. And the only way that I knew that the sitter was on the other line was they pressed the button and I heard the tone.
Okay, so you never heard their voice. This
Nothing.
was part of the research because we've had Dr. Bajelan describing from her end. So it's really interesting to get a medium's end. So you were on the phone and the sitter would just be there and you didn't get their nothing, just the name of the discarnate.
No, nothing. As a matter of fact, they had their phone on mute. I didn't even hear them breathing. And the idea was they were going to invite the person they were hoping to hear from, their deceased loved one, discarnate, to come to Kim at a certain time and date. And then they intentionally, with their intentions, let their loved ones know that they will be in the receiving mode to receive messages. So go to Kim at this time in this date, and we will be having a phone conversation. So I wasn't getting any feedback from them. I just had to say everything I was hearing and feeling and seeing. And then, of course, even when they scored our accuracy, it was really just a scale. They never really were able to tell us how many hits we got. However, I will say this one thing, I'll never forget it. After the Winbridge situation was finished and I passed, they told me with flying colors, there was a sitter that wanted to have a formal reading with me because of the accuracy of the information. And I do recall agreeing to it, of course. And after the reading was finished, the woman, it was a woman, gave me validation of my information. And she told me that when I was on the phone with her son came to me and he was dressed in military garb. I saw the camouflage. And he spoke to me about how he passed away, and he showed me his car, and it was the make and the model of his car, and he was happy. I believe if it was a Jeep. I can't swear to it. I don't remember. I don't. Mediums don't have the best memory because it's sort of like an interpreter for the deaf. When that interpreter steps down from interpreting the conversation, it doesn't matter. They did their job, and it's not their information to retain. The same with mediums. So I don't remember a lot of what I said, but this sticks out to me about the camouflage and he was a soldier and he described how he looked exactly to a T. And she later sent me a picture on an email and he told me he was happy that she was able to receive his Jeep, his car, and is driving it. But there were so many other exact evidential details that she shared with me that I was over the moon to hear about it. And Liz, honestly, I don't care how many times I do this work. When I hear the evidence, I'm shocked all over again. I don't care that I do this constantly and that I know how it works. Every time evidence comes through so accurately, it shows me how human I am. The mediumship doesn't matter in that moment. I become the observer along with them, and I am in awe. And I believe that that helps console me about the other side and that fact that we do not die and consciousness never can be destroyed, only change form. So it really does show me and comforts me as well every time I help someone, you know, because I'm on the receiving end of this gift as well.
You ever wonder what mediums do with their free time? How about a 30-something-year-old gay medium living in New York City? Well, in this podcast, you're about to find out. Welcome to Ghost Daddy, a place where LGBTQ+ spiritual people, and our cis-hetero allies, of course, have a place to just be themselves and spread their wisdom. This is the new face of spirituality. None of that love and light, toxic positivity crap. So pour yourself a vodka soda, open up your mind, and start listening. You can listen to the Ghost Daddy podcast anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm really excited to let you know about the Science and Spirituality Salons I'm now hosting. During these intimate events, a scientifically verified psychic medium will give all of you readings, and I will give a talk on the science and evidence that changed my mind about an afterlife. This will also be an amazing opportunity to get to meet some of you in person or virtually, and to share more about all the science and data that transformed my worldview and got me through my worst days. These can be hosted in your home, in a nearby cafe with a private room, or they can even be virtual. I've hosted a few already, and they were really special, fascinating, emotional, evidential. So if you're interested in getting a small group together over dinner, brunch, drinks, coffee, to learn more about the science and to get evidential medium readings, send me an email at hello@wtfjusthappened.net and put science and spirituality in the title. So you touched upon Forever Family. You were among the first batch of certified mediums. What was that process like? I do know their certification program, well, they keep a lot of it secret, but I do know that it's changed a lot.
It has.
So what was it like then?
Well, we did this in person, and they had set up it looked like a gymnasium, if I remember. It was in a hotel, or it looked like a big room. And they set up partitions back then with curtains, you know, those barricades. And there were these little cubby holes, and each sitter sat there, and we made our rounds, and it was very similar. We didn't know anything. We didn't know who they were looking to hear from. We didn't know anything about the sitters. And each medium was on a panel, and that was it. We had to go to each booth and read each person, and they had a scoring sheet. You would know this better than I would at this point, Liz, if the scoring is still done similarly. I don't know.
They keep that secret, so.
They do. I just don't know if it's the same, if it's harder now, or if it was harder then, or I don't know. It's something I might want to ask Bob. So we just give as much information as we possibly came up with. And we were timed. We had a certain amount of time to say, and they scored on accuracy. There may have been some things we said they weren't able to recognize. Nothing was 100%. And I still say to this day that this is not a language that we speak in words, but it is the language of energy is pretty interesting. And also, not to forget, if we're open channels in that moment, in that time and space, with all sitters hoping to receive a message, just like on the telephone or a Zoom call, if I have more than one person in the room, the other people's loved ones might filter into my reading. So maybe the information for the next person in the next booth was infiltrating because they don't see time or space. So they just infiltrate. So that might have been some of the explanation. And I have found that many, many times that does happen. In the early days, I would read one person after another in these home parties that I would go and work. And I would have in the first session some guy's named Sal, just as an example. And Sal's relative may have been my fourth sitter. And I'm like, oh gosh, so Sal belongs to you. He was here quite early. And all the information checks out. So, you know, so it's really through trial and error that we learn these things.
So I know one of the interesting things that they study at Winbridge, and it's a question in general, psychic reading someone's energy, future, energy of a living person versus mediumship, communicating with someone who's passed away. What is the difference experientially for you as a medium? How do you know you're not just reading everyone psychically?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the first thing is I was actually reading psychically at one point, and I had the tarot cards in front of me. And so a sitter would come and say, I want to know about my love life, just for an example, or my career, whatever it was. I would do, I'm self-taught in tarot too, because nothing follows the rules with me. It's really just whatever happens. And I trust my own guidance. So I'm self-taught in tarot, and I did that for quite a while. But what started happening, I would open up a four-spread tarot reading, and I would say, you know, who's Kathy? Oh, Kathy's my mom, but she's deceased. I would hear this over and over. Oh, that person is so-and-so, but they're deceased. And I would go into this big message from the deceased. And they would walk out bawling their eyes out. I worked in an angel store. It was a crystal angel store. And on Saturdays, the owner, known as Angel Bill, he had psychics. And again, this was the very beginning. And the line was wrapped out the door because, you know, when you see someone coming out hysterically crying, you want what they just had. And it really, that showed me more than anything that I was tapping into another realm. And that's how it happened. Yes, I know who that is, but they're dead. That's what they kept telling me. And I'm like, why am I reading all these dead people? And then also the difference, Liz, is when you do a psychic reading, it's like reading one chapter of a book as opposed to reading the whole book. How exhausted are you after reading a whole book? You're pretty tired. It takes a lot more energy from the medium. That's another reason how we know the psychic readings are a piece of cake compared to a medium reading, because we have to raise our vibration and the spirit has to lower their vibration, and we do meet in the middle. But it's the raising of our vibration that kind of burns the life force. And literally, that's how I describe it. It does take our life force to do this work, which is not always very healthy. And I don't want to scare anyone, but I'm all about, you know, letting people know this is not as glamorous as it may look. We're really using our life force to connect. And sometimes that can wreak havoc on our physical bodies, for sure.
Thank you for doing this work. I mean, that's very, I know it's not easy.
It's not it. I compare it to a fuse box in people's homes. You know, we're connecting to a source of energy, just like the fuse box connects to the electric in your home. And sometimes we blow a fuse, you know, and we have to take care of ourselves and get, you know, grounded and nurture ourselves and, you know, not overdo it too. Like that is rule number one I teach my students.
Now, I have to ask you, as such a science-minded person, I know you talked a little bit about the Winbridge and Forever Family testing. Is there an experiment you've participated in that you think was amazing?
Yeah, there is actually. I won't say names. I don't think the studies are out in the science journals yet, but this particular study, the staff assured me that there was some very unusual findings in my brain scan when they tested me. They hooked up all these electrodes to my brain to see the activity of how things happen when I'm in an actual reading. And they put me in a soundproof booth where I couldn't hear anything. And it's similar to the Winbridge testing, where they would, at this particular experiment, if I remember correctly, it was a few years back, they would just give us the first name of either the loved one, the sitter, or the discarnate. Like, I don't recall. I think they mixed it up. So they found something very interesting in my process while I was channeling that they said they've never seen before. So we are in the middle of trying to get to the bottom of what they saw. And I'm trying so hard to describe my process to them so that we can figure it out. I know it's energy. It was energy that they were seeing on the screen.
Like some brain activity that they've never seen.
Well, that's what they told me. They told me they've never seen it before. They said they saw something similar with a yogi that they once tested, a yogi. So I'm sure yogis work with energy too, as we know, especially the enlightened ones.
I'm just sitting here waiting for these results to come out. I'm so curious. And once we're allowed to share, I'll share a special little episode because I know this research has come up before with some other mediums that they're also not allowed to share.
Right.
I want to ask you again, skeptical, science-minded, what has convinced you this is real?
One night in the earlier days, I was at the dinner table with my husband and my three children. And back in those days, I was answering my own phone calls. You know, like I said, I was reading people for free, no charge. I saw myself as an apprentice. And I did this for one whole year. And the phone usually would start to be ringing off the hook around dinner time. You know, back then there was caller ID, but we never knew who would be on the phone. Like, what if it's important? What if it's back then we didn't screen our calls as much. So I would be answering the phone. I'll never forget this as long as I lived. And there was a woman who wanted to make an appointment. She said to me, she had heard it through her friend that I was very accurate. So she said to me, before I make an appointment, now listen, this girl had nothing to lose. I wasn't charging at this point. She said, could you give me a sample right now on the phone?
Oh my God, that seems kind of rude, actually. But
It was so rude. She said, because I don't know if I want to invest my time if you're not the real deal. This is what she said to me. So something came over me. Like I was like, what? I said, can I ask you a question? Do you go to a hair salon and tell them to just trim half of your head before you decide if you'll pay for it or if you even want to waste your time with the service? And she was rude, so she didn't care that I said that. But I said, no, absolutely not. That's not how I work. I will not. I'm in the middle of dinner. When I hung up, that was the trigger, though. See, that was a really good catalyst to get me to move to the next level. That really happened for a reason, as everything does. So I told my husband about it. He said, what was that all about? I said, well, some people just have some kind of nerve. He said, listen, you're doing this work for one whole year now, and the phone is ringing off the hook. He said, are you still not convinced that this is real? He said, has anybody ever called you complaining? He said, actually, people are calling 2 and 3 times trying to get in with you. I said, I know. I said, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not comfortable. Charging. He said, oh, and by the way, I don't recommend that you answer your own phone calls anymore. I said, I don't want to hire someone because, like, we were on a very fixed income. I was a stay-at-home mom. My husband worked 3 jobs. He said to me, I will do your appointments. I said, how are you going to do that? You're never home. He said, I'll take one night of the week, and that's what we'll do. We'll leave a message on the answering machine. If you were looking for an appointment, call this night between these hours. I will answer the phone, and I will schedule your readings. And then we had to make up a chart of what I would charge. Of course, I was very much undercharging, but it didn't matter. I felt comfortable with that for a while. And that's what the turning point was for me, making it a full-time career. It chose me. And I'm not going to lie, I felt really good helping people. After each reading, I was on a high. So how can I say no?
It's a catalyst of a really obnoxious person that can change things, you know?
That's what happened. And it was an eye-opening experience. And I said, gee, people will just take as much as they can get if you're giving it to them, you know? So it was a big lesson in boundaries for me as well. Doing this work, you must have boundaries. Everybody needs something. Everybody lost someone. And, you know, and that's why when people ask me for an appointment and I am booked up and I can't see them right away, I refer them to one of the evidential mediums at the Winbridge or the Forever Family Foundation. I'm very comfortable doing that because at least I know they've been vetted, they've been trained, they're professional, they have ethics. And it makes me feel like I'm not leaving them hanging somewhere out to dry without any resources.
You guys are all such a good community. That's one thing I noticed. It's non-competitive. All of you just support each other. One of the things I love about Forever Family.
I have to agree with that. And I have found that there have been some that might not have foot the bill in the supportive community part. But I've also noticed that those people never really stick around. It's as if the universe takes care of it.
Or Fran takes care of it, more likely.
Bless her heart, yes.
Same thing, right?
Good old Fran. It is, because Fran did not stand for any nonsense.
None.
She ran a very tight ship. You have to. I don't care if you're children in a school or you're adults in this kind type of volunteer work. You need some kind of law and order here. And you have to really stand up. I think that's just as important as the evidence, is having compassion. A non-compete clause in your heart, you know?
Right. What would you say is like the biggest what the fuck evidential thing that you saw that you were just like, oh my God, how did that happen?
I have an answer for that, because it probably is the most WTF in my life, and I'll never forget it. It was part of the teaching moment for me that we do connect to the animal kingdom, which I wasn't really sure about. But one evening, two nights a week, I would go to people's homes and they would get a group of 10 people together and we would all sit in a circle, and the hostess never was charged. So that was her gift, and she would get the people. And one evening, I went around the room and everybody got a message. I was satisfied. I was very happy with who came through for who. The only person that did not get a message was the hostess for that evening. It was her home. She put out a beautiful spread. But there was one thing I was seeing around her from the beginning of the evening, and I dare not even say it, but it was a green, big bird. Like a parrot. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. And I was actually waiting for something to unfold with this parrot, but nothing. It was everybody's deceased family and friends coming through. And it was a really nice flow. So at the end of the evening, I'll always go to the person that I didn't get a message for. And I'll say, listen, let me try to tune into you specifically and let's see if something comes up. And I have this technique where I cleared the room, not my physical room, but the spiritual room, because I have a room that I set up where they come and meet me at. That's a whole nother thing. But I said, well, I only have one thing to tell you, and I'm a little embarrassed to say it, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and trust spirit. I said, the only thing I've seen around you all night is a green bird. It's a parrot. And I heard all of the gasps in the room. Everyone. And I went, what? And the hostess started crying hysterically, so she couldn't talk. But her friend across the room said, Kim, that's why she held this group. She don't want to hear from any relatives. She's here to hear from her bird. I said, what? It was WTF to me. I said, are you kidding me right now? Now, I never communicated with a parrot on this realm or that realm. So this was new. This was another experiment. I had to go with it. I don't recall what was said, but details of this bird's life came through. I remember when you did this for me. Thank you for doing that for me. I had a special blanket. It was all of these things. That is the night I knew I was able to communicate with the animal kingdom. I've had many dogs come through since. And I've had a lot of cats and a couple of ferrets and pigs. Like, yeah, there is an animal kingdom.
As a total animal lover, I love that story.
I do have another story. This to me is an evidential story. A young girl came to see me. She lost her mom. She was very distraught. I didn't know who she was looking to hear from. We don't ask any questions at all. So at the end of the reading, she said to me, I'm very confused. I said, okay, why? She said, well, I came here to hear from my mom. And you did say a lot of things that were accurate about my mom, how she passed away, a lot of things about our lives that my mom said to you. She said, but I'm not sure if it's my mom because you kept telling me a different name. She said, that's not my mother's name. I said, well, she's telling me it is. I said, I'm really sorry. I won't charge you for the reading. I don't want you to not be satisfied. And I was worried that maybe I created more damage or trauma to this poor girl. So she was crying when she left. She's, I don't know if that's my mom. I was like, oh my God. You know, I'm a mom. So I was picturing, imagine if it was one of my kids. She calls me later that evening and she's on the phone with her sister, happy, screaming, ecstatic. I said, what's going on? She said, Kim, I let my sister hear the tape. At those times we had cassette tapes. She said, guess what? That was my mother's real birth given name and I never knew it. No one ever called her that name. I found out from that point on, at least in my readings, they usually give me their birth given name. It's part of the blueprint of their soul. She mailed me a check. She said, I have to pay for the reading. I did not know that was not my mother's name. My sister showed me her birth certificate.
Wow. And that shows mediumship versus psychic. You weren't reading her mind.
Yeah, she did not know. And I'm open to the process. There's so many times people call me back with info they didn't know. And I love the validation because oh my God, look at me. It's more about the process and how, you know, I'm with you. It's like, it's more evidence, actually.
Would you have any final messages, let's say for someone like me in the beginning, super skeptical, has a really hard time believing consciousness can be outside of a brain, and they're in grief and really could use some tangible hope. There's a lot of that in this episode, but a specific message.
Oh, yeah, I understand. Well, if you break everything down, which I really like to do in the course of our life from birth to departing this earthly realm, it stands to reason that we did not exist on this earth until we came here through our mother's womb, or somehow we got here, right? Through the natural process of childbirth. But where were we before we got here? That's my first question. So we didn't always exist here. And where we go is where we came from. So the good news is, well, my husband says it the best, none of us are getting out alive. And it's not funny. And it doesn't seem natural that a child should go before their parent. And it's definitely not natural. If you could look at each soul, not in age, but in age, in soul age, you will find that many of these souls that have already departed, that were younger, were older and more enlightened than their parents. So age is a number that we use here on earth, but the soul itself is ageless. And it's sometimes, you know, it's a stopover. Sometimes it's a longer stopover. But since we're none of us are getting out alive, the only thing that stands in between us and the grief is time. And time that has passed without them. From the perspective of the other side, time is an illusion. It's not real. And in the course of eternity, it's a mere blip, a grain of sand on a beach. So a whole span of a lifetime here for us could seem like forever. But for them, they know once we're reunited, we're in it for eternity. So the grief part is really just getting through the years where time can consume us, and we miss them the more time that passes. But the solace, in my opinion, knowing that they are just as close as in the next room, they come when they hear you thinking of them. It's a call to them. It's as if you're calling their name. They hear our thoughts. They see our special occasions. They're right with us when we laugh, when we cry. And every single soul has always said to me, once they made it back home, they wouldn't trade it for coming back here. Now, it's not to take away from the love they have for their family. They know we're all going there anyway. It's not as dense there, and they can still have a mission when they get there. So that's the good news too. They're very busy doing very important things, whether it be helping humanity, helping their families, which I think they do that anyway, or helping inventors that are here. You know, they're very innovative once they get there, and they're not bound by the ego mind. So they are much more calm, relaxed, and they can do pure soul work. So there's a lot of good points to knowing consciousness survives physical death. But the biggest thing that survives physical death is the highest vibration in the galaxies of all the universes, and that is love. Love can never be severed by any physical death. And you don't need to know that consciously. Your heart will tell you that. And the heart is the barometer of truth, not the mind. The mind will lie to you. The mind is the ego. The mind is what has been programmed since a little child. But the heart is the barometer of the truth. And that's where we feel all our pain and all our love. So the heart will always bring you home. And they'll always be there. Open your heart and you will feel whoever it is you're hoping to hear from or see or get a sign from. Open your heart. They often talk about the fact that there's too much grief there. I can't get through. I can't get the messages in. So groups like the Forever Family Foundation and all the grief retreats that we volunteer for, there's no greater joy than seeing families come together that have some horrific thing in common, and that is a major loss of a loved one. But by the end of the weekend, they find each other and they find solace in each other's pain and they lift each other up. So I very much recommend finding a group that can share in your and understand what you're going through. Just also to know you're not alone and that there is a whole community out there that share in what you share in. But at the same time, the biggest messages our loved ones come through with, through me at least, in my readings is life is for the living. And I want you to keep living.
Hi, I'm interrupting the podcast episode for this week's listener question. So this week, Ella T. asked, is it true that we actually pick our parents? And if so, why do some people pick not so nice or abusive parents? Okay, this is a two-part question and it's pretty complicated. So for the first part, I can't answer that for sure. I know Dr. Jim Tucker, who I've talked about, who studies cases of kids with past life memories, has looked a little bit into between lives. And there are a few children who said they picked their parents. I don't remember the exact details. A few have mentioned how they have picked their parents. And what's really interesting is they've also given evidential details, such as this trip their parents were on, I believe in Hawaii. And they gave details of that, that the kid could not have known. And this was the week and vacation where the kid was conceived. No, they did not give details that none of us would want to see related to our parents, but they did give evidential details about Hawaii and where their parents were and said they chose their parents. Now, why would someone pick abusive parents? I can't begin to answer that with any validity. I know mediums who also have said that we choose our parents, said that often it's we come here to learn life lessons, maybe to teach our parents. If they're abusive, maybe they came here to overcome that and they failed. I mean, I really can't give any answer to that that I would consider valid or worthy. That's just the information I've heard. And I mean, who knows? If you've had abusive parents, anyone, that's just really shitty. And I can't say there's a good reason. If you have a question you want me to answer, send it to hello@wtfjusthappened.net. and put question of the week in the subject. I know I usually say first names, but if you want to be completely anonymous, let me know. And feel free to reach out anyway, even if you don't have a question. I can't wait to hear your questions and hear from you. Hi, can I ask all of you listening a favor? That would be so helpful. Would you mind rating and reviewing this podcast on whatever app you're listening? Even just clicking the star button to rate would be so helpful. With lesser known podcasts, ratings make a huge difference in the algorithm and whether new listeners can even find this podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you for that beautiful message. I think that's perfect way to end on.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you. And lastly, I'm going to ask, where can our listeners find you, follow you?
I'm very active on Instagram, Kim Russo Medium. I do have a Facebook page, Psychic Medium Kim Russo. I have a website, kimthehappymedium.com. You can. I have a online store where you can get autographed copies of my books and crystal items that I use in my daily practice, things that hold, again, if you want to go the science route, crystals hold a lot of energy and they're amplifiers for a lot of good things too in our lives. You know, I just sell what I believe in, all the products. I'm working on another book. So that's not out yet, but I am definitely working on what Spirit told me to talk about and to teach the masses. Your Soul Purpose was my second book. And I find that ever since 2020, and my book came out before 2020, a lot of people are searching for their soul mission. Some people want to make a difference. They feel an urgency to make a difference. So you could read that book for a lot of soul guidance that I channeled right from the spiritual realm. So that none of that was me. I actually argued with my spirit guides about writing a book of your soul purpose. I said, I'm a medium. Don't people want to learn about mediumship? And they said, please trust us, Kim. This is what's necessary right now. And we will give you the words. And they did. That was the book, Your Soul Purpose. So yeah, you could find everything about me there. Join my mailing list. Follow me on YouTube. I'm pretty much everywhere.
And I can verify her books are wonderful. So I'm very excited for your third. And I'll have links to all of this in the show notes. So thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you, Liz. This was fun. Great questions.
To get more information on what the fuck just happened, go to WTFjustHappened.net. There you can order my book, WTF Just Happened, A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife. You can learn all about how I came to conclude that there most likely is an afterlife, but you can also learn about the early stages of my grief and the amazing, fascinating people I met along the way. You can read about how much I harassed the mediums and scientists trying to get evidence to see if the mediums were cheating and see if what everyone was saying actually was true. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to stay updated on any new developments and any interesting new what the fuck updates. So if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It makes such a difference, especially for a new podcast like this one. And if any of you have had a crazy what the fuck yourself, have any questions, feedback, or just want to say hey, reach out on either Instagram at WTF_just_happened_, or email me at hello@WTFjustHappened.net. I love hearing from all of you. It makes my day hearing your stories and questions and feedback and all of it. And remember, you don't have to draw any final conclusions as you wonder what the fuck just happened.